Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where Los Angeles, we have a negative situation that we must wrestle and struggle with problem. I think that's how the saying goes, although I remember it being a lot more snappier. Alan, that's how the saying goes, right?
That's how I remember hearing it in the movies, and I guess in real life, unfortunately, sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? You know what?
What?
The one that starts with Houston and has them as the bearers of the problem sounds a lot better. Unfortunately, we cannot say that for your Los Angeles Lakers, as they dropped Game 1, Round 1 to the Houston Rockets, 112-97. Alan, God forbid this team would actually win a game one and make us feel a little bit better and safer, right? But here we go again, so deja vu.
Safe is boring.
Safe is boring, you're right. The struggle makes the journey worth it, yada yada. I am your host, Jonathan Hernandez. Welcome to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. I'm joined by my co-host, Alan Riley. I mean, Alan, we haven't been to the second round of the playoffs in a long time. It's hot as hell currently in Southern California, but even with it being as hot as hell, I'm guessing you were more pumped than usual. I was more pumped than usual. I told you off air that I kind of went through my ritual of going to Tapioca Express, getting a passion fruit green tea to quench my thirst, something refreshing to kind of pull the whole day together, because here it was, Lakers basketball, 6 o'clock. And for the first like 2 minutes, I was like, this is the Lakers that I know. They've been locked in. They've spent the last 5 days or so resting up, but also preparing. 7-0, Lakers are up. And then, well, the rest of the game happened. And yeah, it was a struggle from there. So just give me your visceral thoughts and feelings going into the day. And then as you were watching this unfold into that disaster of an end of the third quarter into the fourth quarter. Yeah, just give me your thoughts and feelings, Alan. This is therapy time.
When we went up 7-0, it was great. And then the next 44 minutes of the game was not great. Which is actually not true, which is crazy. Like, we were only down by a little bit in the second half. But anyway, my day yesterday. Yeah, dude, I had the, you know, pregame meal, pregame beverages, the whole thing. Definitely had, I'm like more warmed up for Laker playoff basketball than I was to begin the Portland series. The Portland series, I mean, obviously, we're all freaking out during and after that first game. This one, I was, like, a little more settled in. You know, I'm like, okay, yeah, like, this is who this team is. This is their identity. I'm kind of back in the swing of things. And I actually wasn't, like, freaking out during the game, because we were at arm's length throughout. And, you know, when LeBron converted, well, when he had the block shot and then the almost and one, right? I'm like, okay, cool, like, we're turning this thing around, we'll be fine, flip that switch. And then it just went straight to freaking hell. So,
yeah,
yeah, dude, it was, It was really, really frustrating. I was watching with my brother, who he like lightly follows basketball and stuff like that. But, you know, when you're like watching with another human being versus just by yourself, I think it brings out more emotions and you just go a little extra sure. hard and just go freaking crazier. So I was definitely yelling at the TV like a crazy person about three times as much as I typically would. So, yeah, dude, it was a stupid game at the end. I was so mad. I was so annoyed. And I feel like I'm bad luck for these podcasts because, you know, I only got to record one time during the Portland series just because of schedules and stuff, right? So game one was like, oh, no, the world is coming to an end. And then, you know, everything went well. I didn't hop on after that. And then here I am back today. Like,
the world is coming to an end, Houston.
yes, that's what it is. Houston, the world is ending. It's a problem. It's problematic.
Yeah, we got to switch that up at some point, Alan. But yes, I felt like, okay, so I know that we were at arm's length the whole time. Not arm's length, maybe finger's length. We were only down by two
at
the end of the third quarter. Exactly. But I felt like even with that said, after that 7-0 run, I still had this feeling that Houston was dictating everything, dictating the tempo. And then once that end of third quarter into fourth quarter hit, we just, everything kind of came to a head, and that feeling of unease all spilled forth from me that I felt like the team had. The Lakers looked lost and aimless. It seemed like we were chucking stuff at the wall to see what would stick. We didn't look like a team that had been prepping for the last 5 days, you know? I kind of believed them when they said they had 1 foot thinking about the Oklahoma City Thunder, 1 foot thinking about the Houston Rockets, but they should have known this Houston team is the micro ball team. You know, they talk about it so much. They're so different. They're so unique, et cetera, et cetera. And yet it seemed like we didn't have a unique game plan for them. The things that we were talking about in terms of don't fall into that trap and bait where you just throw it into the post and try and force feed it into guys and hold the ball for 7 seconds and face up and just take a mid-range jump shot or take bad drives when they're packing in the paint. The Lakers fell into all those like cliche traps. And I was so surprised because I've listened to at least like two or three other Lakers podcasts or NBA podcasts that have been warning against this very thing.
It's like an oasis.
Yeah, and it's like
they see it there. They're like, let's do it, but it's not there. It's not freaking
there. I guess it's just that tempting, right? You can say it as much as you want to. You can brief for it as much as you want, but once you're actually on the court, I guess it is that tempting. But it was just, I felt like the Lakers looked like the new kid at school had to transfer, and Houston was the cool jock kid who's also ASB president and showing the Lakers who runs this campus and where everything is, how everything runs. Like, that was the feeling I had. Houston had control for much of the night, regardless of whether or not we were within 5 points, you know, for three quarters. So it just concerns me how this team, kind of back to the Portland game one, but obviously this is different because this is round two, you know? You just did a gentleman sweep of the Portland Trailblazers. You did get extra rest. Granted, it has been a tumultuous last weekend with all the boycotting and you know, a lot of people passing away. So I understand that there's that element to it. But the rest of the NBA has had to deal with that as well. You know, these guys on the other
end have had to deal with that.
True. I mean, these are the two teams most, quote unquote, most affected by it, right? But it just concerns me how this team continues to be so bipolar in terms of their lack of focus and just getting bored. And it seems like if they experience any sort of lull or break in rhythm or something like that,
yeah,
they can't instantly bounce back from it, or they can't conjure up the right amount of motivation to come out like guns blazing. So it just concerns me that they can't come into this game one against the Houston Rockets locked in, ready, fresh, and God forbid getting off on the right foot here. Yeah, I think for me that was the most disappointing part. We're going to talk about why this is different from Portland Game 1, and we overreacted to that Game 1 as well.
Yeah, dude, we totally did. It's funny looking back, it's fine.
It is. I feel like there's no such thing as overreaction when you get to Round 2. That's just my personal philosophy because the stakes are much higher, and I just think Houston's a much different team than the Portland Trailblazers, and they pose different threats, and we'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, as usual, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes. We are at 418, so just 2 away from 420. Please combat the random reviews that we're starting to get. these random political reviews, Alan, that are dissertations that span 5 pages long talking about anti-vaxxing, 5G, Bill Gates conspiracy theories, spamdemic.
Wow, I haven't read any of those. I'm going to go educate myself later.
Yeah, I'll forward you one of those. So if you are one of those reviewers, please hesitate to do that. If you don't believe in any of that crap, please combat that type of review and give us a 5-star rating and review that pertains to the Lakers. Also, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also, patreon.com/TheLakersLegacyPodcast. Tommy and I actually posted an extra 12 to 15 minute segment where we talk about a potential Victor Oladipo trade. So if you want a break from all this playoff talk, go to patreon.com, give us a buck, and you'll have access to that and other exclusive content in the future. Also, Thrive Fantasy, if you sign up and deposit a minimum of $20, you'll get a free $20 to play with as well. Okay, let's talk about the differences between this game one against the Houston Rockets and Portland game one, Alan. I felt like against Portland, there were more obvious things to point to that we could say, oh, we just need to shoot better. You know, we played good defense. Yeah. So we actually took Portland out of their game. They didn't shoot well like they have been. They only scored 100 points, you know. For us, it was like, oh, shoot, we literally only made 5 threes and we just need to hit a couple more wide open shots because we got the shots we wanted. This game against the Rockets, especially considering the fact that it was pretty much a blowout, we hit only 3 less threes than them. We only hit 4 less free throws than them. So you can't even use, like, they totally blew us out of the water from three-point land. And they got way more calls than us. They only shot 4 more free throws than us, you know, or made 4 more free throws. And we actually shot a better free throw percentage than them, which is crazy to think about.
That's problematic for Houston.
Yeah, we're last in the NBA so far in free throw percentage in the bubble. So the fact that we shot better than them is crazy.
Yeah, we suck at the free shots.
Yeah, so we can't even point to free throws and the three-point arc as things that we can say, oh, this is where we went wrong. So I just feel like the default tweaks we can make that get us over the hump are a little less obvious in this game. And the disparity is a lot more, especially because we got blown out and we're down by double digits for much of the fourth. On top of that, I feel like the guards that Houston has, there's the obvious Houston plays micro ball. They start PJ Tucker at center. They have Robert Covington. They don't have a 7-footer. Taking that obvious caveat out of the way, you know, I think on surface you'd see James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Eric Gordon and you'd be like, oh yeah, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and Gary Trent Jr., right? Kind of approximates those three. But one, all three of Houston's guards are much bigger than all of Portland's guards. They're also much stronger. I also think they're more athletic, Damian Lillard aside. The other threat that they pose that's different from Portland is they penetrate a lot more, and they're more crafty around the rim. Not even crafty. Russell Westbrook's explosive, right? So you run them off the three-point line, and okay, well, can you stop them from getting to the rim? And it seemed like Russell Westbrook, Eric Gordon, James Harden were getting to the rim at will, getting and-ones, even guys like Austin Rivers, right? With Portland, it's like, you cut them off, and you just have to cut them off at the mid-range as well, because CJ McCollum's not a finisher. Damian Lillard's not really either.
Right.
But you can stop him better than Russell Westbrook, right? So I feel like those are the main differences, that even though we held Houston to only 14 threes and we actually closed the gap by hitting 11 of our own, we couldn't stop them whenever they'd attack the closeouts. Kyle Kuzma was getting blown by Eric Gordon a lot last night, which is kind of perplexing given how well he stopped CJ McCollum. And then I was like, what's the differences? Oh yeah, CJ McCollum doesn't really take it all the way, you know, and he's not as quick as a Westbrook. And apparently not as quick as Eric Gordon. But I guess you also add on top of that the fact that Eric Gordon's, you know, more muscular and has more of a body and likes to rub up against his defenders and can still finish. So what are some of the differences that you see, whether specific or just how it felt and how the team stylistically plays from Portland game one, that gives you more cause for concern with this Houston Rockets team?
Well, like you said, Houston superstars are much more versatile, right, than Portland. So one thing that I noticed is we kept obviously like double teaming James Harden, right? You got to get the ball out of his hands. And I felt like that was somewhat effective, actually, at times. He did have some turnovers when AD would come rushing over to him, and then, you know, Harden's got to pass out of it. At times, that was good, but then I noticed we were also double-teaming Russell Westbrook around the three-point line. And it's like, I don't think you need to do that. I think you let that guy take a contested mid-range shot. Even though, like, okay, yeah, he can get hot from there for sure. That's kind of his bag. But we've also seen him get extremely cold from there.
Right.
If you double him, he's going to pass to Eric Gordon. And Eric Gordon's going to be wide-ass open for a three-pointer, right? And how many times did that?
And he was wide-ass
That's when our back started breaking yesterday, right? Is when we started giving that type of defensive look to Russell Westbrook. So I disagreed with that strategy for sure. And yeah, like, we weren't going to do that to CJ McCollum. We're not going to double team him 20 feet away from the basket. You know what I mean? So that was something that definitely stood out to me in terms of a difference there. And then against Portland offensively, yeah, like, we weren't forcing interior passing because they have Whiteside. They have Nurkic down there. So why would you try to, like, you're not exploiting any kind of mismatch in terms of, like, a height disparity or something like that. But how many turnovers yesterday did we have just trying to force the ball inside? And, of course, Houston knows we're going to do that, so they're going to jump that passing lane. They're going to have really active hands on the interior. And yet we did it over and freaking over and freaking over. I get it. Like, we had, I think, 17 turnovers. They had 16, so that was almost a wash right there. But points off turnovers is where they freaking killed us. We didn't take advantage of points off turnovers, even though they had 16 of them. And I think it's because we weren't pushing the ball, right? Why weren't we pushing the ball? Oh, because we got bigs. Like, nah, that's not how we should be approaching this. We totally lost our identity. I can only really think of a handful of times when, like, you know, Rondo's pushing it. Bounce pass to Caruso, Caruso layup. We got out in transition very, very sparingly. So we just got to get back to our strengths, not our literal brute strength, you know, down low.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to play our style.
Yeah, so something that concerned me too with regards to fast break points is that we scored 18 fast break points to Houston's 9. And our average this year is actually 18 on the fast break. But I felt like against a team like Houston, we should have been pushing it way more. That's one of our biggest advantages. And given how clunky we've looked in the half court, transition points is where we gain that momentum, get into a rhythm, you know, start feeling good about ourselves. And Houston lacks the athletes that we do, and we should have been ramming this down their throats. And it felt like it took us a while to start getting that going. But yeah, the biggest thing that annoyed me was just the turnovers and the terrible post-entry passing. I mean, we would pass it to JaVale McGee and then he'd easily get stripped by James Harden. The Houston Rockets are a very, very good swiping, no swiping, stealing kind of team. They don't have shot blockers, but they know how to strip you of the ball if you're sloppy. And the Lakers, on top of the fact that they were probably working off rust, just continued to make these very ill-advised passes down lower. When they drive, there was no space to make these passes, and they continue to do it.
It's so frustrating, dude. It's like square peg into a circular hole kind of feeling. It's like, dude, it's not happening.
And given the fact that Houston was packing the paint and Rondo was there, and we'll get into Rondo, he did not help the spacing at all. There was not...
LeBron told Frank Vogel...
Yeah, I need some space out there. We need space. And because of that, there was like no diversification or versatility in our offense. Like Kyle Kuzma wasn't running the baseline or running around. I mean, we barely get this on a normal game anyways. So, but given the packed paint, you pretty much had to one-on-one most guys, right? Or go off of LeBron's brilliance or Anthony Davis, triple threat position, face up and hit some jump shots, you know? And he did do that here and there. But I think this game... on the one hand, like defensively, right, we did some good things, but I just felt like our rotations were always like a step slow, a second or two slower than we were in the Portland series. Maybe you chalk that up to rust. But yeah, we gave up so many baseline threes. I feel like 10 of Houston's 14 threes all came in the baseline, and we never adjusted to that. And like you said, Eric Gordon had like three literally wide open threes. I don't know if you remember that one baseline three where we just looked at him and we're like, okay, well, you're open. And he literally took a dribble and then just shot it. And I was like...
LeBron had like one foot in the paint. And it's like, well, why would I close out on this? Because then he's going to blow by me, right? There's no way. So whatever, take a shot. I hated the one with Markieff Morris doubling. That was the one that really freaking pissed me off. He doubled Westbrook around the free throw line. and they kind of trapped him, but Eric Gordon had, like, I don't know how many, like, square feet of space just all to himself, and he could have, like, licked his hands, you know, taken a bite of a sandwich, and then shot the three. That was the one that drove me freaking crazy.
Yep, yep. So the Lakers' defense, I mean, as evidenced by the fact that they gave up 112 points to the Houston Rockets, and also the Rockets shot 48%. That is a good percentage. So something was off with our defense, and that's not good because our whole foundation is built on our defense, right?
Yep.
And our offense is very likely to sputter or go into cold stretches. So we need our defense to prop that up, and it did not do that last night. I think they're still doing the same principles. I think trapping James Harden the way that they did Damian Lillard is good, but their rotations were a lot slower and they weren't as sharp this game. And I feel like we weren't rim deterrents, you know, as big as we are, as tall as we are, we didn't do a great job being able to protect the rim. And that's even with JaVale McGee out there, even with Dwight Howard out there. So we're definitely going to need to adjust, adapt to what Houston's doing, especially when they blow by us, when we close out for these three pointers. I still think we're solid with our game plan. Maybe we just need to be a step quicker, but yeah. We'll take it to our first break, and when we return, we'll dive deeper into how the Lakers lost this game and what they can do to adjust and, make some changes. All right, so we're back, and outside of that 7-0 lead to start, after that, I never felt like the Lakers had any control. I never felt like they had this, oh, we figured out these Rockets moment, and that we were just biding time till we could turn it up a notch. If anything, I felt like we turned it down three notches once we finally got it to 2 points, right? Which, you know, is an interesting game plan. We got them right where we wanted them, and then, oh, here we go! But it always seemed like we were continually trying to catch up to them, you know? I think after that 7-0 lead, we never had the lead. And if we did, it was maybe only for 2 points and for a very short time. Anytime it seemed like we had momentum as well, our defense would randomly break down and we'd allow, like, an and-one layup or a baseline three, or we'd turn the ball over, or all three of those things, right? So we could never really, like, put everything together. But most of all, I felt like we did not exert our will or identity on this team. It kind of felt like we were rudderless with no identity, which is weird because we have Anthony Davis and LeBron James, right? And we're tall, we're big, we're stronger, we're going to impose our physicality. And none of those things seemed like they happened. We were pretty much dead even with the Rockets in terms of rebounds, right?
Yeah,
41 rebounds. We did out-rebound them from the offensive glass 10-4, but PJ Tucker had...
Oh my God, freaking
I think he had more Tucker offensive here. Rebounds than any one Lakers player, which is inexcusable. Yeah. Also, there were no lobs from us outside of one LeBron James to JaVale McGee mini lob in the third. For a tall team like us, as athletic as we are, that is inexcusable.
Well, yeah, it's like, what's that indicative of, right? How stagnant were we on offense? We didn't run any kind of high-low sets. You know, there's nothing like that. Not even a play that was kind of drawn up, right, to just get things kicked off after a timeout or the quarter or whatever. So, yeah, that was totally something that was missing.
What facilitates those things, like you mentioned, is movement, space on the floor, guys hitting shots so that you can stretch Houston's defense out even a little bit, even when they're packing the paint. And, I mean, Rondo tried one out to Anthony Davis, and he got a foul at least. But outside of those two instances that I just mentioned, what were we doing the other times? We were trying to feed it into the post in that free throw line mid-post section, right?
It's just, yeah, I was going to say, and if by post you mean 18 feet away from the basket, yeah, we got it in the post.
It was bad. No space for cutters, no movement off the ball. No free throws, right? We need to get to the free throw line more to at least put pressure on the Houston Rockets. I felt like we looked like the team that didn't have 5 days off to rest. Obviously, you can point to the sharpness factor that they had to play game seven, but why weren't we running faster? Why weren't we dunking? I mean, granted, LeBron James had one of the most ferocious dunks I've seen him pull off in a Lakers uniform in a while,
right? That was disgusting. That was sick. I lost my ish right there.
Totally. Was that on Eric Gordon? Eric Gordon was trying to take the charge,
Westbrook,
right?
Westbrook.
Oh, Westbrook.
He took a knee to the sternum. It was great.
LeBron James had a couple of very insane athletic plays on Westbrook, including those blocks. He had that two-handed block where he pinned it to the glass pretty much.
Loved it. Took it
the other way, got the and one, and I was like, here we go. When LeBron James does that double shoulder shrug, here we go. Unfortunately, Alan, LeBron James didn't score a point in the fourth quarter.
Know.
So there we go.
Oh, and then we'll give him props. He had the volleyball spike as well in transition. That blocked it. That was so sick, dude. I was going crazy.
That was on Westbrook as well.
Yeah.
But yes, we need to exert our force and dominance, and I do not feel like we did that. Did you?
No, hell no. Definitely not. One of the other things that bothered me most was, like, even though AD had a great stat line, right? It was back to that kind of indecisive mindset for him, where he's catching the ball 18 feet away from the basket, and he's facing up, and PJ Tucker, you know, he's doing his happy feet thing, and AD just doesn't, like, he doesn't know what to do, right? He's not going to drive. He could just, like, pull up right there and knock it down, but that's obviously not the most efficient shot, even though he did have, like, that mid-range pretty hot against Portland. But then the other problem is, like, our team as a whole, an entire unit, was also very passive, like, not being very aggressive. So if he's got to pass out of that situation and there's no movement, you're forcing him to ISO. So it isn't just on Anthony Davis, but I do think he was, like, still guilty of just being kind of stagnant himself. Yeah. And obviously, like I said, there's kind of a trickle from everywhere else there too. But it was disappointing to see him not assert himself as much. He had a few moments where he really did, you know, play big, you could say. Some offensive rebounds and ones, putbacks and things like that. But I thought that they really did take him out of his game too. So, yeah, I don't want to say, like, it's all his fault, but I did get that feeling, that same frustrating feeling where I'm like, dude, you gotta, you know, you need to, I don't want to use the four-letter S word that starts with an S and ends with a T. It's not an expletive, though. I really don't want to use that, but I had these feelings of, like, Pau Gasol in a way. You know, where it's like, oh, come on, dude. Like, we know you can do it. We've seen you do it. Just stop being so...
Yeah. Ironically, Kobe Bryant famously said that to Dwight Howard when he was wearing a Houston Rockets jersey. And how the turntables.
Black swan. Gotta be a black swan. We'll say that.
And, you know, I was kind of looking for that one moment or one or two moments from Anthony Davis where he'd just have that ferocious, where he'd grab the rebound from, like, three Rockets players and then jam it down, get the and one, hang on the rim a little bit for extra punctuation. That would really get us going, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And feed us, feed that momentum, but it never happened. And I feed off of that from a guy like Anthony Davis. Like, I know LeBron James had that crazy dunk. I know he had those spectacular blocks, but they were kind of, like, too far apart to really cull up something, you know, tangible that you can feel. So I was also looking for that from our big man, the 6'11 dude who's versatile and strong. So I totally feel you there. Let's talk about Rondo really quick, because this was a huge new element, Alan, that I feel like
24 minutes worth.
24 minutes, the third highest on the team for a guy that hasn't played for 6 months.
But are we that surprised? Really? Are we that surprised?
I knew they were going to play him. I didn't know they were going to play him the third most minutes on the team.
We should have done an over. We should have done an over under for Rondo minutes.
We should have. And look, granted, Rondo, I think his first few minutes in the first half, he did play pretty well. He was pushing the pace. He got Anthony Davis free throws at the line. He hit Alex Caruso for a nice cut and a layup. He even got the rebound himself, took it coast to coast, hit that layup.
You called it. You texted us. You said he was good.
Yeah. And then, okay, but this is the thing with Rondo, as with guys like Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith, right? You have to have this quit while we're ahead mentality, you know? You have to have a short leash on these guys, especially because they're so...
Walk away. Stop betting on it.
They are so defective defensively that you never know when this is going to go on a downturn for us immediately, and that's exactly what happened in the second half. And Frank Vogel, I'm beginning to lose... I mean... I had these feelings and inklings when we started this bubble seeding season because I was like, what are these rotations that he's throwing out there? Why is Frank Vogel continuing to say that we're still experimenting 8 games into our 8 regular season games?
Well,
right,
we're back to
playoffs?
Experimenting in the second round.
We're back to experimenting with no real aim or vision in mind. It seems like we're throwing these rotations and lineups together again for the first time. And the fact that we have to adapt to 24 minutes, and it's not just like you're throwing Kyle Korver in for 24 minutes and you know he's going to space the floor for you and that's it, right? Rondo plays a huge role when he's out there.
Yep.
And so you're going to hit big or miss big. And most of the time you're going to swing and miss with Rondo because he doesn't provide anything on the defensive end and actually breaks apart your great defensive scheme that you've worked so long and hard to perfect and implement, right?
You know what else Rondo does? Rondo allows Houston's defense to just run away from him anytime he's by the three-point line and double anyone who has the frickin' ball. That's what Rondo also helps with.
And the worst part is he relegates Kuzma back to being a floater on offense because Kuzma doesn't have the ball to find a rhythm. Rondo doesn't do a good enough job finding him on three-point shots or even just cutting, although he did have that one layup in the fourth quarter, which was our first bucket in like 5 minutes. But Rondo really hurts Kuzma. And Kuzma, I feel like, already wasn't getting plays run for him. And so now I'm just scared about what's going to become of Kuzma from here on out, you know? Because Kuzma's a rhythm player. He says it so many times. I need touches. I need feel for the ball. And when you give it to Rondo, it's just like, okay, pretty much Kuzma, I just hope you can hit your three-point shots the one time out of every six possessions that you get the ball at the three-point line, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, what are your thoughts on Rondo and having to adjust to a guy like this, a huge influential guy at this stage in the playoffs? I knew it was going to happen eventually. I didn't know it was going to come at this time, and I didn't think Frank was going to be as stubborn.
I think I would have set the over-under for minutes at, like, 21 going into it, so obviously he blew past that threshold. But I think the play that stood out to me most, and it wasn't anything, again, that Rondo was necessarily doing. He was in the corner for a three. And Eric Gordon just completely abandoned him, right, as his assignment. And Anthony Davis got stripped, and it got turned over. Now, at first you watch, and you're like, ah, like, Anthony Davis, like, another turnover in the post. This sucks. You got to be, like, more aware, because AD sometimes does, I feel like he catches the ball, and he's kind of thinking, like, what do I do next? What do I do next, right? Especially because he's not great at passing out of double teams. But he didn't know Eric Gordon was there, like, at all, and he had a really clean strip, but the only reason that happened is because you have Rondo out there who you don't have to guard at all. And without Rondo in the lineup at all, okay, so who else could have been out there at the moment? Caruso had like foul trouble throughout the game, so that was kind of an issue, but whether it's him, KCP, Danny Green, I mean, those guys, you can't leave them alone for that short corner three, so now your spacing is improved. Paint isn't all jammed up. So that was one of those like straw that broke the camel's back for me just in terms of the Rondo experiment. But yeah, like you said, he started out the game like pretty decently. I was like, all right, cool, he's pushing it, all that kind of stuff, even hit an open shot, but man, I don't know, dude.
Yeah,
you gotta take his minutes down. And again, like, Caruso did get in. At first I looked at the stat line, I was like, damn, Caruso only has 16 minutes. A lot of that was in garbage time, right? But I didn't realize that he was in some foul trouble before. It just didn't, like, hit me. So hopefully that's something that'll shift things going forward. That's what I'm going to cling on to in terms of hope.
You know what's the saddest part about this and why I continue to go back to those 8 regular season games that we just treated as conditioning preseason for whatever reason? Is the fact that we actually got Deion Waiters' decent run. He was a staple part of the rotation. And then we totally obliterated that plan, if it was a plan in the first place, once we got into the playoffs. And now we may actually need to turn to him for some primary creation, because if you're going to play Rondo out there who doesn't play any defense and you're looking for some ball handling relief for LeBron, why don't you just put Deion Waiters out there who can at least slash it into the lane and finish, you know? And
that's
where Houston has problems. That's where they had problems with Chris Paul. And Dennis Schroeder, isn't Deion Waiters a Dennis Schroeder type player who puts pressure on the defense and can get his own shot, whether it's from the mid-range or driving it straight into the lane or creating it for other people? Yes, and yet LeBron James is the only player who can do that on this team, Allen. And unfortunately, it's harder for him than it is for these smaller guys, because LeBron doesn't really have a mid-range game. And then on top of that, he's like 6'9". He's a big target, and when they pack it in the paint like that, if he tries to drive it in, he's liable to get an offensive foul. These guys like Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, Deion Waiters, they're more slithery, right? They can get through the creases and whatnot. LeBron can't do that, and when he's your only guy who can dribble the ball, and then the next guy you're relying on is Rondo, who was missing random layups when he'd get it into the lane last night, you know, chalk that up to age or rust or whatnot. Rondo can't play anymore. It's frustrating because now we may need to call Dion Waiters' number, and he's not ready. He's not in a rhythm. You saw him even when in garbage time. He couldn't hit a shot. You know when he had a rhythm? During preseason. We played it like preseason. During the 8 games before playoffs. And then because you were just using that as quote-unquote experimenting and not treating it seriously, this is what you get, right? And so I hope Dion Waiters is at least ready if we do turn to him, which I hope we do, because if we're going to play defense like that, put someone out there who can actually put pressure on Houston's defense outside of just, hey, face up and take this mid-range jump shot and hope we hit our threes, you know?
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, Alan, really quickly to close this out, let's talk about silver linings and what the Lakers can do to improve. I think what's good is this clearly wasn't our best showing. And it's been shown that you can wear the Rockets down, wear them out, as the Oklahoma City Thunder did. And maybe it just does take a game or two, hopefully not two for the Lakers, but it does take some time to adjust to how they like to play. You know, the Thunder were down 0-2, eventually kind of found a rhythm against the Rockets, tied it up, got it to 7, so we can only hope that that's what's happening here. LeBron James said it's taken them this one game to really get a feel for how fast the Houston Rockets are and what they're trying to do against them. So I'm hoping that we can adjust and adapt the way that we did against Portland, the way that we have all season, although I have concerns with how Frank Vogel has approached this entire Orlando bubble. Also, I'm not so sure we see another fourth quarter in which LeBron doesn't score only in which
yeah,
LeBron
that ain't
doesn't
gonna
score
happen. That right ain't gonna happen.
Things that we can change, we just need to clean things up. A lot of our turnovers were unforced, self-inflicted. We can't
for sure
do that against this team. We cannot. We need to play bigger. You know, maybe we play JaVale and Dwight a little bit more minutes, but even when they were on the court, I still didn't feel comfortable. You know, like guys were still scoring on them. There's a way where we can play smaller than JaVale and Dwight and still play big because we're still bigger than the Houston Rockets when Anthony Davis plays 5. We just can't play him as much with Rondo out there because it's not going to work when Rondo's out there. If we have Anthony Davis and Markieff Morris as the power forward and 5, that's still hell of a lot bigger than the Houston Rockets. And I feel like any time we had those lineups out there, we were still playing small. So yeah, any silver linings you see that can be kind of easily tweaked that bode well for us moving into game 2?
Well, aside from LeBron not being able to score in the fourth quarter, he had that extra spring in his step, dude. Like, I haven't seen him this explosive on the defensive end in a long time. Like, chase down block is, like, one of his staple moves, right? But we saw it multiple times last night, which was crazy. And even, like, the goaltends were super exciting. So, it was really nice to see LeBron kind of shift into that next gear on the defensive end. Other than that, I mean, Caruso did look good in his limited minutes. So, hopefully he gets more run. That'll be a key for us. Danny Green hit some open shots. He didn't shoot well from the field overall, but he didn't miss everything. So, like, the fact that the ball actually went in the basket from three-point range was promising. So, I would think, like, those guys will round into form. I think there was, like, some rust, right? That type of element here. I, for some reason, have faith that DG, that KCP, they're going to hit their open shots as the series goes on. So, that'll be okay. But, you know, we got to push it in transition and get those easy looks instead of really slowing things down as we did last night. So it's weird. Like, I'm not happy, obviously, but I feel oddly more comfortable going forward in this series than I did with Portland.
Oh,
interesting. And again, I think with Portland, it was just like, oh, my God, we haven't been in the playoffs in 30 years. So I'm freaking out over everything. And because I saw how we were able to turn it around, granted Portland's a way different team, I'm just a little bit more settled in right now. I'm not worried that we're going to lose this series. Let me put it that way. Could we get stretched out to 6? Perhaps. I don't think we're going to rail off 4 in a row, right?
Yeah, I sure hope so, Alan.
I'm bipolar like them.
Well, I continue to hold on to the fact that this was a 2-point game with 3 minutes left in the third
totally
after Kuzma hit a 3. And also, we just need to not have such a terrible run, historically terrible, it feels like. We can't go on these 0-for-14 runs where the other team rattles off like that many points and we can't do anything for a stretch of 5 minutes. You know, those types of things. And sadly, the Lakers have shown a propensity to do this, right? This isn't an isolated incident. But you just, if you can eliminate that, you're in much better position and this is more of a game in the fourth quarter. And then LeBron James can play most of the fourth quarter and actually hit a bucket to actually affect the outcome of the game. So we just just can't have something that jarringly ridiculous happen to us again. One more thing that I'll add is that this Rockets team isn't too unlike the Warriors teams that LeBron James faced when he was a Cleveland Cavalier. And actually, they're worse in terms of personnel, right? But in terms of Robert Covington is like Draymond Green, James Harden is Steph Curry, the combined impact of Eric Gordon and Westbrook is kind of like Klay Thompson, PJ Tucker is like your Andre Iguodala. And so LeBron James has felt this before. He knows how to play against a team that's dynamic like this. So hopefully we can all adjust, that all the players can independently, internally adjust. Hopefully Frank Vogel freaking fixes his rotation, plays Rondo less, maybe plays Markieff Morris more. If you want to go big and really exert our force and make them play to our style, yes, play JaVale, play Dwight more, but have them play big when they're playing. Eliminate the careless turnovers, push it into transition, get Dion Waiters some run. Yeah, I feel like everybody just needs to shake off the rust, be more focused, bring that same sort of locked in kind of desperate mentality that they did coming into that Portland game too. And I will feel a hell of a lot better if it's a semi blowout or we're up by double digits at some point in game two, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, it's gonna happen, dude. It's gonna happen.
Okay, man,
just watch.
I'm holding on to you for this confidence because I'm in overreaction mode. I'm so scared.
Maybe because it's like Saturday morning right now. Just woke up an hour ago and I'm kind of like, yeah, I slept it off, which maybe is a good thing.
Alan, you know what else doesn't help though? Is the fact that the Clippers, who have been very shaky this entire playoffs, came out and blew out their opponent.
Those bastards.
It was bad. They destroyed the Denver Nuggets in game one. And granted, the Denver Nuggets aren't as good a team as the Houston Rockets are, but, you know, our barometer is like, how are we doing against the Clippers? Oh, shit, well, this is the entire opposite. We pretty much got blown out, right? So that doesn't help quell my unease. But yeah, we just have to hope for better, and at least we're better than the Bucks again, Alan, who are 0-3.
Oh, my God. It's a travesty for them, dude. It's crazy.
Well, at least we're not the Raptors, who are 1-2 and maybe should be 0-3 if not for a 0.5 heave by OG Anunoby.
So sick.
Yeah, at least we're not in that place yet. So Lakers, please turn it up on Sunday.
Because we played one game.
Exactly.
Silver lining.
You're going to have to carry the litmus factor for this podcast.
I got this,
right,
bro.
Now.
I got
so
this.
We'll hold on to that. With that said, thank you guys for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes. And looking for good lit litty vibes on Sunday when the Lakers will inevitably turn up. Alan, I'll catch you later.
All right, dude. Stay cool.
Yeah, stay cool, but the Lakers, please get hot. See you, dude.
Later, bro.
Peace.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.